the Johnson case. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. I think Mr. McCracken has taken all the rain jokes, so I'll leave those aside. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please. May it please the Court, my name is Kathleen Ortiz with the Public Defender's Office in Chesapeake in the case of William Thomas Johnson II.
Ms. Ortiz, let me see if I can narrow this. Isn't the real issue, at one point, if at all, the officer either terminated or abandoned the investigation for the traffic offense?
Yes, I think that's precisely the issue. And our position would be is at the point that he exited his car upon Officer Samuels appearing on scene with a canine dog, and the Officer Ewell then started assisting in the drug investigation. I think you could arguably say that it started even earlier when the officer called for canine, but I'll say that at that time he was still in the process of calling for information regarding the driver and passenger's license information, warrant.
At what point did he either stop or abandon that inquiry?
Your Honor, I would say at the same point, that he, at the time he exited his vehicle, when he'd given up the purpose of the traffic stop, which was getting information for purposes of issuing a citation for defective equipment, and instead turned to assisting Officer Samuel in the drug detection. I don't think it's a question of what would happen with this case if it had been decided post-Rodriguez. The fact of the matter is that the suppression motion was heard prior to Rodriguez. I think the real question, though, is whether, in fact, number one, there was an abandonment of the initial purpose of the traffic stop, then also whether the subsequent time taken to run the dog around the car was of a de minimis delay. You know, it's interesting. De minimis has several different definitions that I've found.
But, counsel, there's no specific time denotation for de minimis. Here, the stop with the drug dog took about 10 minutes.
Yes.
In addition. Is there anything definitive that would indicate that that's not de minimis?
We are, if I can, when you look at what the definition of de minimis is under various dictionaries, a trifling consequence not worth consideration, too trivial or minor to merit consideration, negligible. I think when you're looking at a total traffic stop that is about 19, 20 minutes in length, and about half of that time is devoted to running the dog around the car, not once, not twice, but three times, before there's some suspicious alert. There wasn't an actual alert by the dog, but it's at that point that Officer Samuel put his dog back into the car, proceeded over to where Mr. Johnson was, asked Officer Ewell where or who had been in the passenger seat where the dog had alerted, and then he started asking questions. When you look at it, that it's almost half the time of the entire traffic stop, I think it would be hard to say that that's a de minimis delay when at the time that all this is going on, Officer Ewell's not in his car pursuing the traffic stop. He said that he was in the process of running information. I think it's unclear precisely what he had completed at the time that Officer Samuel arrived, but he clearly said that he had not received any information that would have caused him to believe that any of the passengers or the driver in the car were wanted persons, were subject to arrest or anything. But at that point, when he exited the car, although he retained their driver's license and identification cards, he was not continuing to pursue that. He had given up on that course of action and was merely, at that point, assisting in the drug detection activities. So in this case, when the court decided that it was a de minimis delay, although the trial court didn't use that language, I think that's what the court was talking about because they said that they didn't find that it was sufficiently deliberate action to warrant a finding that it was more than allowed by the Fourth Amendment. I think the court was referring to the de minimis delay exception. I think, quite frankly, the trial court got it wrong. Because here, not only do we have the information from Officer Ewell's own testimony that he had called immediately upon getting into his car, the video also supports that. He had it in his mindset at the very initiation of starting to call for the identification cards, warrant checks, etc., that there was something suspicious because of where they're at and why they're there at that time of night. And I think it's clear from his own testimony that he was suspicious that there were some drugs there. So I'd submit that part of his entire initiation of the process from that point was to get the drug dog out there so he could, in fact, figure out what was going on. I think it's important to note that when he was standing at the side of the car, he clearly said there was no indication of paraphernalia, no indication any of the passengers or the driver were under the influence of narcotics, no evidence, no indicia of narcotics in the car, and yet he still called for the drug dog. And he felt it sufficiently important enough that when Officer Samuel arrived with the dog, that instead of continuing the process of writing a summons for the defective equipment, he instead got out of his car and stopped the entire proceeding to assess Officer Samuel. So it is our position that this is more than a de minimis delay, primarily because Officer Yule abandoned the purpose of the traffic stop entirely at nine minutes and 50 seconds into the video, and it wasn't until 19 minutes and 10 seconds into the video when Officer Samuel actually asked the question of Mr. Johnson if he had anything in his pockets or if he had any narcotics on him. I think that this case is distinguishable from Matthews, which is a Court of Appeals case which decided a similar issue, but unfortunately affirmed the trial court's denial of the suppression motion. Because their officer was still in his vehicle actively pursuing the information that had been provided by the driver to determine what he was going to do, when a second officer who was having a casual conversation with the driver spoke to him and got the driver's consent to search the car. So there you had actually two officers on scene. There was nothing that the initial officer did to delay the traffic stop to get the consent. And I would say conversely here, you have the officer who is delaying the purpose of the traffic stop to continue the investigation into the narcotics. And I think that's a distinction that must be noted here. short of that, Your Honor, unless you have any other questions, I'll rely on my brief for the remainder.
Thank you, Ms. Ortiz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell representing the Commonwealth on this appeal. The Commonwealth would argue that pursuant to existing law at the time, as recited in the Matthews case, the officer's inquiries into unrelated matters related to the initial stop did not measurably extend the stop duration.
Counsel, wouldn't this case be distinguishable, though, from the Matthews case in the sense that what counsel pointed out is that it was a very brief period of time once the officer was detained from doing the purpose of the stop? Here we have a situation where it's 10 minutes for the purpose where the stop occurs to where the drug dog shows up, and then another 10 minutes. How are you able to say that that is de minimis under Matthews, which you cite in supporting your position?
Certainly, Your Honor. The Commonwealth's position is that the case law in Matthews and what Matthews stands for is ultimately what should be applied to this case. But this case is factually different than Matthews. And the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth from the record is that the officer lawfully stopped the vehicle for the burnout headlight. During that stop, he obtained three of the four passengers in the car information, returned to his car, and began running the information. He had not completed running the information when the second officer arrived, approximately.
How do we know that?
His testimony, and I believe that's also what the trial court found, was that he was still running information in the video on page 104, I believe. The trial court points out that he can see in the video that he's still looking at ID and looks like he's punching stuff into a computer.
But he also said that he checked and the driver's license was valid, and that he checked and there were no warrants or any outstanding issues for the passengers. What else is there to look
at? I don't believe that's his exact testimony. I think I'm looking at page 40 of the appendix when he says that these are the systems he was checking, and as of that point, nothing had come up yet, but I don't believe there's anywhere in the record that I can see. I could obviously be wrong, Your Honor, that he said that he was completely finished with running those three and then everything had checked out well. I think his testimony was that thus far nothing had come up. And his testimony also on page 40 is that he still needed to get ID from the fourth person, and he ultimately did get that after the arrest. So he never abandoned the initial purpose of the stop.
Checking the identification or the criminal history of a passenger, is that in furtherance of investigating whether or not there was a burned out taillight?
I think, Your Honor, once he had reasonable suspicion and stopped this car for the burnt out headlight, that he did have the right to request identification. They were lawfully stopped. It was a lawful stop for that purpose, and he had the ability to obtain identification for all the people at the scene and run it. And that's what he was attempting to do. Again, the Commonwealth would assert the light and the evidence in the light most favorable suggests that he did not finish the computer checks. The trial court accepted that testimony as credible.
Did he ever, after he finished assisting the drug officer, did he ever go back and finish his computer check?
I didn't catch the last part. I apologize, Your Honor.
After he completed his work with the drug officer, did he ever go back to the computer and finish his work?
I believe that he did, but I do not have somewhere to point that to you. His testimony is that after he completed with the drug officer, he obtained the information for the fourth person, and he ultimately issued a warning to the driver. And did not issue a summons. So he did return to the purpose of the stop, and that is the Commonwealth's position that he at no point completely abandoned the purpose of the stop. The Commonwealth would assert that the Ramsdell case cited by the defendant is different from this case, the same concept that we've been discussing, in that in Ramsdell, the officer never attempted to continue the stop. The officer in the record, there was no indication that the officer even told the defendant in that case why he stopped him. In this case, our officer did say, yeah, I've stopped you for a headlight. He talked about that. He got their information, went back and run it. But in Ramsdell, there was never any testimony about that. And so in that case, this court found that it was solely a narcotics investigation. The officer never...
So your position is that even after the drug investigation was concluded, he still was working on investigating the traffic stop?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm sorry?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, you're indicating, though, that in terms of Ramsdell, you think it's inapplicable as it relates to these facts that the officer here abandoned the purpose of the stop?
No, and the officer in Ramsdell never... the officer in Ramsdell never did really investigate the purpose
right,
of the stop.
Right, he never informed the driver
right.
as to why he was stopping. I understand that, but
okay.
I'm saying you're saying it's completely inapplicable to the factual pattern here.
Yes, Your Honor. And so the Commonwealth would assert that at the time of the offense and the stop, the standard was the de minimis standard, and at no point did this officer abandoned his purpose of the stop. He continued the investigation. The trial court accepted his testimony as credible. On page 104 and 105 of the record, the trial court made those factual findings that it could still see him running the information. And based on that, the Commonwealth was assert that this fit in with the controlling law at the time and ask that you affirm unless you have any further questions.
On page 41 of the appendix, line 22. All right. Did you then stop your process of running those checks when he got there, meaning the drug officer? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, he got out of the... Yes, Your Honor, I see you. What you mean by that. And I believe in the light most favorable of the Commonwealth that because when you take that in with the video, he got out of the car, so he was not physically any longer putting information into the system, but there's no indication how long the system takes. And the Commonwealth tried to elicit that testimony and unfortunately was unsuccessful on saying how long it generally takes for the system to, once you input information in it, for it to spit it back out. But based on the context of the testimony, I believe in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, the officer is testifying that he was no longer inputting information into the system because he did get out of his car to assist the other officer. And if there are no further questions, the Commonwealth would ask that you affirm.
Thank you. Ms. Ortiz.
Just briefly, Honors. I think if you then look at page 42 of the joint appendix, the Commonwealth follows up with, Did you learn anything from anyone's criminal history that might, and I'm not asking the specifics, that might lead to suspicion of narcotics? No, ma'am. So I think even by that statement, he's admitting that he didn't have any other reason to get out of the car to pursue a drug investigation. He should have at that point, if in fact he had not completed the traffic stop, the purpose of the traffic stop, continued with it. And here's the problem, is that only reason, if, and I'm not saying, I'm not conceding that he had, but if he had not in fact completed running the information necessary for issuing the citation, which ultimately was never issued, the only reason he did not complete that at the time, at minute 9:50 of the DVD, was because he chose to get out of the car to assist Officer Samuels with the drug detection. Not because he was waiting on information. That's not in the record at all, that he's waiting on the computers to come back, as some of the federal cases have indicated. They're waiting for a Montana license to come back, for example. They're waiting for the information regarding a rental car agreement to come back. That is not the evidence before the court. He instead chose to abandon what he was doing in the pursuit of the traffic ticket for the defective equipment and instead assist Officer Samuel in the drug investigation. And that's where the problem arises for the Commonwealth. We would ask the court to reverse.
The trial court, after reviewing the video, said, and then before you know, we see Officer Samuel there and Officer Ewell speaking to him. He's in the car pressing keys on what looks to be a small computer that's in there. Is that a factual finding of that the investigation continued?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because we don't know what the officer was typing into the computer. For all we know at that point, if I remember correctly, that was after they'd actually found the drugs on Mr. Johnson. It could have been, and this is the problem, is it requires a court to speculate as to what the officer was doing. It could have been that he was entering information in there to seek the a warrant for the possession.
But is this after the drug investigation was concluded?
I believe it was, Your Honor. Can you point me to where in the appendix the judge was saying that?
I'm not sure. But I'm reading it verbatim. I'm not sure where it is, but it's there.
Yeah, if my recollection is correct, I think that that occurred after Officer Samuel had concluded the running the drug dog around the car three times.
Well, he said, we see Officer Samuel there, and Officer Ewell speaking to him. He's in the car pressing buttons on what looks to be a small computer.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I can't find that right off, but Your Honor, even if it was while Officer Ewell was in the car when Officer Samuel arrived, the point of the fact is that he chose to give up the purpose of his investigation at that point to assist Officer Samuel. He could have just as easily stayed in his car, and if he had any remaining tasks to do, he could have completed them at that time, written a citation, or decided not to write a citation, and then move on. The fact of the matter is he got out of the car to help Officer Samuel.
What I read was this on page 104, starting on line 1.
I don't think that's inconsistent with what our argument is, that he in fact did start the process, but he chose to stop the process when Officer Samuel arrived and instead pursue the drug investigation and not the purpose of the initial stop. Thank you.
Thank you. We will come